You are listening to KBOO, KBOO, Portland. Next up is Transpositive PDX with your host, Emma.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
KBOO Community Radio wants to hear from you, our dear listeners and members, about why you support KBOO, why you listen, and why others should support the radio station. Please call 503-231-8032, extension 302, and tell us your name, what KBOO means to you, and why do you continue to support KBOO. Again, that's 503-231-8032, extension 302. Thank you for supporting your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. My name is Emma and I use she and her pronouns.
Hi, and I'm Pat and my pronouns are she, her, Aya.
I'm Dawn Holt and my pronouns are she, her, hers.
And we're here tonight. I'm here with Pat Becken, the president of PFLAG Portland, and with Dawn Holt, who is vice president of the national board of PFLAG. And before we get started, I would just like to dedicate this show to the beloved memory of Sue Bartlett. Sue is a dedicated KBOO volunteer and a beloved member of our community who passed away this weekend under unfortunate circumstances. And we really love you, Sue. We hold you dearly to our hearts and we will miss you. So this... I'm personally want to dedicate this show to her memory. We will just jump right into talking about this. But before we do, I do want to remind you that our membership drive is coming up September 16th to the 28th. You're going to be hearing pitches kind of like this just in a couple of weeks. So I'll just kind of get you warmed up right now. If you love your community radio station, if you care about hearing from diverse queer voices, from shows like Preference, if you like hearing Guinevere, if you like hearing Nicolette, if you like hearing Jean, if you like hearing all of the fabulous different kinds of queer voices that are on KBOO every Tuesday between 6 and 7 p.m. for Queer Boo, consider going to kboofm.fm and making a donation. We cannot survive without your support. And so consider this just an advance training for September 16th to the 28th, when you'll be hearing us constantly reminding you that we cannot survive without your support. And so we would love it if you would go to kboo.fm a little early and make an early donation to KBOO, because we need your support. So let's get right into our show. Pat, Dawn, welcome to KBOO and welcome to Transpositive.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Emma. Thanks for having us.
So we're here tonight to talk about PFLAG. So let's start by first of all saying, what is PFLAG? What does the acronym stand for?
Well, you know, it's an old acronym, mm-hmm. actually. Initially, it stood for Parents, Family, and Friends of Lesbian and Gay.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization came together about 1973, and it's branded now. But of course, we're inclusive of the terminology LGBTQIA+. But it's so well known that it doesn't make sense to let it go.
Right, right. So it's an acronym, even though the terminology of LGBTQIA++ has like really expanded into this whole rainbow of language, which includes non-binary, asexual, all of these different categories. This is part of what we still treasure and hold to as part of our past. So we really value it because it is the language of our past, even though now it's a little bit antiquated? I don't know.
Maybe say that.
But PFLAG serves a really vital purpose within our community still because it's a legacy institution. So
PFLAG for me has just been such an environment of welcoming and just a solid community of people who are very clear about who they are, what the need is, what needs to be done. And for me personally, once I connected with PFLAG, it's an organization I cannot imagine not being a part of.
Yeah, I
completely agree. And one of the things Pat's fond of saying, and I've sort of taken it upon myself to say it as often as I can too, is PFLAG is the way the world should be, just as inclusive as we can possibly be. And it really is. When I first started coming to PFLAG, it was to find community. It was to find other parents, other allies, other folks who really wanted to live that mission of inclusivity. And really found it with PFLAG, was not disappointed at all. And we continue that still. It would be nice if that was something that we don't need to work so intentionally on in this day and age, but that is just not the case. So there's still really a huge need for the work we do.
Well, let's talk about, so we've covered the acronym. So let's talk about what I'm going to call the herstory of PFLAG. When did PFLAG start? How did it start?
Sure. Actually, it was started by the love of a mother who wanted to support her son publicly and make a statement. Her name is Jean Manford, and her son, Morty, was unfortunately a victim of the...
Queer bashing.
He was in one of the bars. I don't know if it was Stonewall specifically, but he was in one of the bars in New York City and was targeted by the police.
Right.
And Jean knew about this, and that's really what prompted her to become the activist that she was.
Oh, great. Yes. So he was actually in the Stonewall riots.
I think it was the Stonewall, yeah.
She was the precursor to what we know as the Pride Parade today was the Christopher Street Liberation March, and it was actually a protest. And she was walking with this, there's an iconic picture of her with Morty walking down the street, and she's holding a sign, and help me out here, Dawn, Parents Unite in Support of Our
Unite in Support of Our Children.
Right.
Very powerful statement for then, 1973.
And I love the part about, so she's marching with him, and I just love the picture of her because she just looks classically, she was an educator herself.
Yeah, she's a school teacher.
And like the glasses, the hair, the coat, the sturdy shoes. And apparently the story goes that the famous pediatrician, Dr. Benjamin Spock, was walking behind her, but as she was walking down the street, people were applauding, and she thought they were applauding for him. And then young people started coming up to her and saying, "Would you talk to my parents?" And she was yes. And so really that was her experience. There was the impetus to start gathering parents, and 46 years later, PFLAG across the country, over 200 chapters across the country, over 400,000 members.
400,000? Wow.
And almost that's all the states, including Puerto Rico and Honolulu, Hawaii.
Yeah, there are chapters in Canada. There's chapters in every state except North Dakota.
Oh, that's the one I did.
For
know.
Some unusual, I mean, really, we don't know why, but there's never been a, there's never been a chapter that formed there. Huh. But other than that, there are states, in every part of the union.
Yeah. Huh. Wow, that's 400,000. That's amazing. Wow. And it was started because of the love of a mom.
There you go.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
For her gay son.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so great.
And, you know, the experience of her, I we call these P-flag moments. And they happen all the time. And it's a multifaceted experience to have. But at my very first P-flag meeting, I had that exact experience where I shared my reason for being there, and there was a break, and there was a young person, an individual who was actually, the presentation. I was thinking still along the binary. But that person's presentation, I couldn't tell. And they were in a wheelchair and clearly had a serious physical disability. And as I was walking by them, they grabbed my hand and said, and apparently because of what I shared why I was there, they said to me, "Would you talk to my mom?" And that was like my first PFLAG meeting. And I was like, absolutely. And they said, "She won't come to these meetings."
Yeah.
And so I said, "Absolutely." My mom kicks in for me. I was like, "Absolutely, honey." And I said, I'll give you my number, and I'll meet her for coffee at her house, my house, whatever works. I never heard from them, from their parent, but I learned later, when I learned about PFLAG moments, I realized that right out of the gate, I had one. And it doesn't matter how long you've been in PFLAG, when you realize you're having one of those moments, it's touched me, it's never left me, and they continue to happen, and I think that, that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so great.
Yeah.
So you may have heard a little bit of commotion going on here in the studio. We've got a live webcast going on at the same time as our in-studio broadcast, and that was being set up by our next guest, who is a tech genius and an amazing writer, and just a couple of minutes late, which we'll totally let by this time because we're just so honored to have her here. This is Cassie Breiter. Cassie, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hi. And I'm sorry for making the noise. I was trying to be as quiet as a mouse, and then I realized two things. I realized that Bixby was going on my phone, which does not qualify me as a tech genius. And secondly, for some reason, I have a bag of Rex crackers, which is the absolutely worst nightmare to have when you're trying to be quiet in a studio.
Well, welcome, Kelsey. Can you please tell us your pronouns and tell us a little bit about the organization that you're here to talk about today?
Sounds good. She, her are my pronouns. I am a trans advocate. I'm a writer and public speaker. I like to introduce myself as your typical suburban mom, your typical suburban pansexual polyamory transgender mom. I'm a newcomer to Portland. I've lived in Los Angeles for many years. I have three kids. One of them is grown. One of them is off to college, and the other one is 13 years old, and she's starting a podcast with me. I run Empowered Trans Woman, which started with the Empowered Trans Woman Summit, which I ran in 2017. I interviewed 67 experts, including a number of trans women, including Monica Helms, the creator of the trans flag, and Bryn Tannehill, and a few other celebrities, and also surgeons and therapists and people associated with the journey of transition. I was trying to paint a broad panorama of all of the resources that might be available for folks. And that spawned the website and now the Facebook page, which is what I'm broadcasting to right now, and which has 1,500 followers. And I got on Instagram because I'm young and hip. earlier this year, and I'm doing my best with that platform. I have 2,500 followers so far, and it's growing. And the whole idea of, and I'm trying to be succinct, but the whole thrust of empowered trans woman is that I feel like we've heard quite often the victimhood narrative and how difficult and challenging life as a trans woman might be, which is valid. God knows my life hasn't been always a bed of roses, which is a good narrative to tell our cisgender allies, and it's a good narrative for the mainstream media to tune into. But in terms of trans girls who are beginning their journey, in terms of women who are struggling themselves and they don't need to be told how tough things are, what I wanted to speak to in this case is the positives. There are engineers out there, there are concert pianists, there are actors, and there are surgeons, and there are a whole bunch of trans women who are excelling in the world, who are in positions of authority. I interviewed Alexandra Chandler, who was running for Congress in Massachusetts at the time. The whole idea is to put forward the idea that not only can we do well in society, we can actually teach cisgender people a thing or two from our unique perspective. So,
oh, wow. That's great. That sounds just amazing. I'm a total fangirl of you, Cassie. I follow you on Medium. You're a great writer, and I'm just so happy to have you here in studio today. So I look forward to our conversation. I think what we're going to do is we're going to jump back and forth a little bit. We're going to go between PFLAG and talking about empowered trans women, and maybe we'll kind of have like a shared conversation too about things that we all
and if I may, there are two thoughts that I wanted to acknowledge about PFLAG. The first thing is the fact that support needs to move in concentric circles. The person at the center of the life event or the trauma or whatever can't be the support for the family. So if a person is going through an illness or a challenge, or my son going off to college, or in my case, my transition, whatever it is, the epicenter of the thing is, the people around need to be the support of that person. So the mother of the gay kid, the mother of the trans girl should not lean on the gay kid for support, but she needs somebody. She needs some kind of support. So PFLAG is a great concentric circle around the family of LGBT kids, and that's really important because, and I've spoken a lot with parents of transgender kids, and they're trying their best and they're paddling as fast as they can, and they're trying to catch up to their kid's journey. Meanwhile, they're getting all of this pushback from society, from people who have no idea what they're talking about. We're classifying them as, you know, child abusers and whatever else, just for the fact that they're trying their best to accommodate to their child's journey. So it's really good when the parents have somewhere to turn to and someone who validates their efforts and also their pain. So that's a really important quality of PFLAG that I've always admired.
Very much.
Thank you. That's nice to hear.
Thank you. So, I got a chance to talk to you, Pat, a little bit about PFLAG, but I haven't had a chance to really ask you yet, Dawn. Dawn, how did you get involved in PFLAG, and what role do you play on the national board?
Well, let me start with my story. I think one of the things that is most powerful for me about PFLAG is that we are always encouraging people to tell their stories. So my son, who is now 31, came out when he was 14 years old as a young gay man. And I was not one of those moms just waiting for their son to tell them. Some moms will tell you, oh, I've known all along, I've just been waiting. I was not that mom. So when my son told me that he was gay, pretty sure he was gay, he said, Mom, I have something to tell you. And he's just starting high school. So I assumed that it was something about a project that was due tomorrow that was going to require us to put in a lot of work, you know, that kind of thing. Instead, he said, I think I'm gay. My background is in mental health. So I tried to be the very cool parent and like, oh, that's not a problem. No worries. Just carry on. He stopped me. I'll never forget this. And my son said to me, it may not be a big deal to you, but it's a big deal to me. And that was the moment that I realized my life has just shifted. You know how there's some moments you just are like crystallized in your brain? That was one for me. I decided within about a year, again, I felt pretty okay with my kid. Knew I had things to learn, but felt pretty okay with my kid. But I knew what I was really missing was what you were alluding to a little bit, Cassie. I needed to know other parents that had LGBT kids. I didn't know any parents with LGBT kids. So went to my first meeting in the place where we still hold our meetings, in one of our meetings in downtown Portland, and literally found my community. And just never left. That was 12 years ago now. So wow. That's what brought me to PFLAG. And from my heart lives in chapter work. I'll always be part of the chapter, but I got involved at the national level as a regional director, which means I helped with chapters, all volunteer work, but helped with chapters in the Pacific Northwest, including Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and Montana. I did that for a few years, and now I'm the chair of the Regional Directors Council, which means I work with those regional directors from across the country. That's also a national board position, so I'm the vice president of the national board, too. But my heart lives in chapter work, and I can't imagine being a part of PFLAG and not going to at least one or two meetings a month, because that's really where the work is done. Yeah.
And I realized, Pat, that I did not ask you what your PFLAG story is.
Oh, thanks.
What is your PFLAG story?
You know, actually, when my son came out to me, he was a senior at the U of O, and I, unlike Dawn, I'm kind of smiling now because she described it perfectly. When he came out to me, now in retrospect, it was like an out-of-body experience. I can see myself leaning against the windowsill, taking his phone call, and I'm also one of those mothers. I thought I was hip and cool. You know, I marched that kid in the gay pride parade when he was five, and so I thought I was clued in, right? And even prior to that, I mean, I was involved in justice work, and I used to facilitate workshops on racism. And I say this: racism, sexism, homophobia, and you know, I would just like slide over homophobia as if racism, sexism, and homophobia were kind of all the same thing. They're not. And so the short version of the story is I was at home I was training this woman literally in my bedroom because I had a little business out of the corner of my bedroom and I was moving to an office space. And my son called. And I think all three of my kids were in college at that time. And so when the girls call, I have two daughters, you know, they call and they chat. My son, no, he wants something. I mean, he has a purpose. He doesn't call just to chat. So when he called and he said, hey, Mom, can you talk? I said, sure. And I just walked around the corner. I have a little hallway to my bathroom. And I said, sure, what's up, honey? And he went, I'm like, Nicholas, what? And then he said, well, you probably know already. And I'm like, please, honey. Just
be more specific.
Yeah, spit it out. And literally, I said, spit it out. There's this person around the corner there. You know. And he was quiet for a second, and then he said, well, I'm gay. And I went just like this. Well, you know that doesn't matter to me.
Making eye gestures.
I just hesitated. And I said, honey, you know that doesn't matter to me.
It doesn't matter.
I'll always love you and care about you and protect you. And he said, okay, well, did you send my check? No. Back up. And so...
It's so disappointing, like when you really want to shock your mom by like telling her something, well, and she's just like, "Oh, I support you. That's great."
Well, you know, I just you know walked out, and the Brenda who was sitting in the corner, I said, "I'll be right back." And I went in the living room. I said, "No, we need to have a little bit more of a conversation." So of course we did, and but you know, when I hung up from that call, I will say something literally washed over me. It felt visceral. And I thought, and I'll just be honest, I've said it in chapter meetings, it's like I went dark. Uh-huh. My mind went to Matthew Shepard.
Oh, right, yeah.
And for those who are listening who don't know about Matthew Shepard, he was a young man in Wyoming who was murdered. He was beaten and left tied to a fence and died.
Yeah.
My mind went there.
Right.
And I had like a 10-second moment where I thought, if somebody ever hurt my kid, I will hunt you down. I will kill you.
Right.
And then also I was like, oh, no. My God.
Yeah.
What are you thinking? You're a hippie. Peace, love. Tie
right.
Guy.
Exactly.
So I
peace
thought,
and love.
I was like, what was that organization?
P-Flag.
Yeah, so I found P-Flag. But, you know,
go get some support.
Over the years, I thought I knew things until it got very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Then, you know, over the years, I've come to realize when he said, I'm gay, and I went...
There was a pause.
That 3-second pause, mm-hmm, must have felt like an eternity to that kid.
Right, sure.
But even more so, it was clear to me how hard that is to even come out to a parent that I think he knows I love him and I support the queer community.
Yeah.
We march on the gay pride parade and my yeah. niece and, you know, all these things. But that to me was so indicative. Years later, it kind of hit me. Like how hard that was for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kelsey, what is your, so as a host of Empowered Trans Women and a mother of three, what is your story? Like how did you come out to your kids? And what is, if you feel like sharing it, how was that story? How did that go?
I do feel like sharing and I have some amusing anecdotes. First of all, my oldest daughter, and I hesitate to say this, but she's in her early 30s now. I had her when I was 2. but when she was 19, we were watching the sunset in California, and there was a quiet, intimate moment, and my daughter told me that she's bisexual. And my response was, imagine the coincidence. So she came out to me, I came out to her.
Oh, you came out at the same time.
And that was pretty funny. Yeah, when you're a trans woman, and I don't know if you'll relate to this, but you have a number of coming out. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when you're LGBT, quite often you have a number of coming out as you mm-hmm. try to identify your identity. In the case of my oldest daughter, she came out as bisexual and she stayed bisexual. My son, he's 18 now, so when he was 12, I got him his first phone. It was a flip phone. And I told him at the time that I was going to monitor that phone. And I have a kind of unique relationship with my kids. I'm very non-hierarchical. I make it very a strong point to not be judgmental and not to be the big authority, which... is a huge pain in the neck to raise kids this way because everything is a debate and everything is a long conversation, but it pays off. But I told him, I'm going to be monitoring this phone just in case to make sure that you don't get cyberbullied, to make sure that you're safe. So I saw the fact that there was a hairy chest picture coming through that phone when he was, you know, 13 or so.
Mm.
And I said nothing. And then my co-parent raised a stink over it, which I found ridiculous. But he said, no, he's just imagining what he's going to look like when he's older. And I said, sure. So I just kind of became aware that something might be up. My LGBT antenna were moving. And I began to go to Pride just... as part of my personal journey, I was pretty open with my kids about my own stages of finding myself. My kids went, 2011, 2012, they went to Pride to support me. And then at one point, my son, I forget exactly how he said it, but he came out to me as bisexual. And then over the course of the next 2 years, we had a lot of conversations about it. One conversation which I like to speak in analogies, and so I came up with this metaphor that I encourage parents to use. I said, look, if I'm going to Target, let's do a plug. I love Target. If I'm going to Target and I'm going to buy clothes for you, if you assure me that you like the color brown, I'm going to buy you brown pants, I'm going to buy you brown shirts, I'm going to buy you a brown t-shirt. If you secretly like blue, we're both going to waste our time and I'm going to waste my money. Just tell me you like blue, I'll buy you blue clothes. So I'm trying to talk to you about dating. I'm trying to talk to you about relationships and stuff like that. Help me frame it for you. If you want me to talk about guys, we'll talk about guys. If you want me to talk about girls, we'll talk about girls. And he remained steadfast about the fact that he was bisexual. And this is touch and go, because I already had my ideas, but you can't ever adjudicate somebody else's sexuality for them. But I had some ideas in my head. But anyway, at 16, we were sitting down to dinner, and he said, "So I'm gay." And I said, "All right, so macaroni and cheese or spaghetti?" My co-parent had a couple of moments of this. It's just a phase. It's just a stage. But eventually she got on board too. And we, generally speaking, he's going to a really queer, positive high school. He's had like non-binary and lesbian. His best friend is a lesbian. So there's like this straggling straight kid. My daughter is 12 now. When she was 11, we were at a wedding and we had a quiet moment where we just went walking in the down a trail, and she told me that she was having a crush on one of the girls in school. And I said, "No, you can't. You're the one straight hope.
The one straight."
"I'm trans. Elena is bisexual. Your brother is gay. For Pete's sake, somebody's got to help us figure.
Round us out here."
I also told her, "Look, boys are pretty dumb, but 11, they get better. Give them a chance."
Well, it sounds like both of the organizations that we're talking about tonight, PFLAG and Empower Trans Women, are really about supporting the community. It sounds like that's something that we really have in common. So let's go back to you, and we're going to do this round starting with you, Kelsey. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how does Empower Trans Women support the community?
Definitely.
What does it do? How does it?
Mostly what I seek to be is a publication where I feature women that are succeeding, and I tell their story, and I help them tell their story. But as I'm doing this, and more this is framing itself in the format of a web magazine, so I'm steering this effort, and it's shaping itself. But for example, we're discussing topics which are very much of the day. Like one very, very challenging question for trans women is dating. It's easier if you're drawn to queer people. It's a little tougher if you're drawn to cisgender heterosexual men. There, just about 3 weeks ago, there was a case of a man who was relentlessly bullied and taunted for the fact that he was dating a trans woman. People had bullied him and filmed the bullying, and then that went viral and he killed himself.
Oh, wow.
So it's really challenging because the men who might like us are themselves stigmatized. Malik Yobag, who is an actor in a TV show, recently said that he's attracted to trans women. That's what we need. We need more men who will stand up proudly and say, "I would date a trans woman," because I don't know if you remember, Eddie Murphy at one point was caught with a trans woman just in the car, and that became such a scandal. The notion that somebody might be out to dinner with me and that would be a scandal.
We're just presented as if we're a fetish.
We are, and it's kind of...
Which makes us into an other.
It almost reminds me of like when a white man was seen with a black woman or something like that. You know, we're like the undateables or something. So that's one topic that surfaced that we're discussing. There's other things. The transmilitary ban has affected many lives, specialists, highly trained people who now find themselves without a job. So we're mostly providing the right now. It's not I'm not in a position to provide any resources other than the healing that comes from stimulating the conversation. And then also bring a little levity in the fact of, like, we're all going through these things together, answering a lot of questions about the specific medical aspects of transition, which are a nightmare logistical endeavor. And also the fact that a lot of cisgender people are looking in, and I'm humanizing trans women for them. Mae West has a great line, which is, there's nothing as freeing as a ruined reputation. Mm-hmm. I spent 40 years of my life just agonizing over every detail about how I'm presenting society, what impression am I creating? And I just burnt all that down. And now I honestly do not care what people think of me. And that has given me a unique freedom of speech, I guess, that a lot of people are thanking me for being able to voice things that they might be uncomfortable voicing. And all these little things are surfacing that I'm hoping are moving the needle forward a little bit. Something very intriguing, for example, trans woman in society is a moving target. There were the images that we had in the 70s and 80s. There was the transsexual. There was a whole decade of the Donahues and the Jerry Springers, just using it completely as clickbait, and just making it so sensationalistic and sexualizing the whole thing. And so we keep coming to know this experience in different ways. And we, the trans women who are dealing with this, kind of are finding ourselves stupidly trying to accommodate that whatever the narrow narrative is in society. And so one of the things that keeps happening is that we keep trying to match the cisgender standards. We keep trying to legitimize ourselves by saying, we're just like you. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of sad in a way. I'm sorry, I speak in these weird analogies, but in Latin America, where I grew up, it's very common for brown women to have names like Blanca, Albina, and Clara. And it dawned on me eventually that that's colonization, that's white-facing and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And anyway, that's a weird analogy. But what I mean is that I find that we trans women constantly are trying to cisgender ourselves. That surfaced really interestingly recently because one of my acquaintances on my channel, Imogen Loxley, saw how a girl was mocked relentlessly for the fact that as she was showing herself in a bikini, her bulge was showing. Mm-hmm. And so she did something, if you'll pardon the really stupid pun, something pretty ballsy, mm-hmm. which is she took a picture of herself in a blouse, in her underwear, sitting in her bedroom. It was a very classy, very non-sexual picture, and she looked beautiful with her makeup on, but she wasn't tucking. Mm-hmm. And so you saw a bulge in her bikini area, and the internet exploded, mm-hmm. and she was demonized, and all of the incels came out and fought her, and she had 2,700 messages of hate on her her Instagram. And a team of six of us went in there and started reporting each one mm-hmm. of those. So it was a little bit of a, it takes a village to protect this girl. But what a courageous thing to do. And it raised this whole debate.
It really is. Yeah.
It costs somewhere between $20,000 and $60,000 for the medical transition. And it has a lot of consequences. And there's all this preparation. And it's not like it's something you're going to do over lunch. So a large percentage of women, as they're going through the different stages of transition, might not have every aspect of their body to the liking of the cisnormative society.
Or may not even want to go there.
Mm-hmm. Or might not even want to go there because there are pros and cons to each one of these surgical decisions. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it should be a really personal decision. It should be a matter of, like, what serves me for me to be at peace with my body, not trying to conform to some external standard. Anyway, so all these conversations are surfacing, and I think that that's doing a lot of healing and also doing a lot of informing to the cisgender community who's looking in.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. That's a great story. And it's really touching on like issues that are so core to so many people in the trans community, especially, I mean, because, and it goes both ways too with the surgeries, like, you know, there's so many different kinds of surgeries that trans men and trans women can have. And it's like so great that we've gotten to a place now where we have access to these surgeries. Mm-hmm. But it also presents a whole set of implications, which I think Cassie has just like really touched on really brilliantly, which are, you know, is there this, on the one hand, it's like it's considered this privilege to transition because you want to have a body that matches mm-hmm. your gender identity. But on the other hand, is this also like a form of like, I don't even know what the word is. We're going to have to invent it. Maybe you've already invented a word for this, like where you're trying to like pretend you're cisgender, like in a way that's like maybe even just kind of weird, you know, like not in the sense of like the standard like W path way that we go with our trans bodies, which I've gone and a lot of us have gone through. I mean, and I think most of us are really happy with that.
I've been calling it pandering. I've been calling it colonization.
Good. Uh-huh.
I
totally respect your right to use language however you want. I might have a problem using language that's related to colonialism crossing it over in terms of gender politics, but you're welcome to use language however you want. And you're a great writer, so I totally respect.
And you know, you bring a good point. And I've been chastised a couple of times in, like I say, I use analogies a lot. In some of my analogies being drawing from race, for example. However, we use the term passing. The term
we passing, do passing, yeah. We use that all the time.
It comes from brown and black people being light-skinned enough mm-hmm. where they could pass as white.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of these things which we're borrowing from other marginalizations, and I think the most glaring example is race.
And we do, yeah, no, because I'm totally like just hearing you talk is like for me so nice, because like as someone who is of Latinx heritage, like I'm always struggling with that, like being white passing, like mm-hmm. in a dominant culture, but like, you know, all of my stories, all of the narratives that like inform a huge part of my identity are Latinx, which are about like the stories of brown people. Mm-hmm. But like we live in this culture where we're just completely surrounded, overwhelmed by whiteness. And so like we try to fit in, those of us who are within these communities, like we're up here in the Pacific yeah. Northwest, you know, where we're trying to fit into that.
And I have a kind of unique also, her story. I really like the term uh-huh. her story. I have a unique story in the fact that my parents were refugees from World War II. They arrived as children to Argentina with their parents, with nothing, and from a Russian heritage.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up in a Latin environment in Argentina, being the other because of the fact that I was European.
Uh-huh.
And then I moved to the United States in my senior year, which is not advisable.
uh-huh.
And I left white. I left Buenos Aires white, and I arrived to New York Hispanic. And I was like, what happened to my white privilege? I could have sworn I packed it. It was on the plane, wasn't it? But yeah, and then I was taught by fellow Latin Americans how to avoid being classed as a subclass, as a second class citizen. Uh-huh. I was even told to tell people I'm Canadian. So I have these stories of experiencing colonialism and experiencing race from a kind of a strange perspective.
Uh-huh.
So, but yeah, borrowing terms such as that, I don't know. I would actually welcome the audience, both in terms of your radio show and in terms of the gals watching, to tell me what you think. But my perspective is that there are so many parallels that it's worth capturing that. And I'm a really big believer in the intersectionality. I believe. And you brought up an interesting point.
You are irradiant too, Cassie. You really are. Yeah.
Thanks. You brought up a really good point, which is homophobia is very different from mm-hmm. racism. Quite often they intersect because mm-hmm. The experience of a black trans woman, for example, in black culture is very different from the experience of a white trans woman. In Latin America, in Argentina, the homophobia is so visceral. I had a cab driver, we were engaged in conversation, and I had a cab driver just very casually tell me that if he had a gay son, he would have to kill him. And he said it sort of like an imposition, like a nuisance he would have to deal with. Mm. Not that he'd want to, but obviously you'd have to. And I was just half listening to him because it was a long ride in the cab. And then he said this, and I was closeted at the time, but I heard this and I was like, and you hear things like that in macho culture, and macho culture is, black culture is very macho, and Argentina culture is very macho, and you find these, wow, these concepts that just rattle you. Mm-hmm. I really believe that transphobia, homophobia, these things are deeply rooted in misogyny. Mm-hmm. They are deeply rooted in the idea that woman is the second gender. Woman is a subcategory of man, and man is the ideal. And so if a boy would like to date other boys, he's devaluing himself because he's becoming more like a woman. If a trans woman comes out as a trans woman and gives up these bucket loads of male privilege that you have to say bye-bye to, then she's devaluing herself and going... and so I think that that's at the heart of it. If we really were to fight misogyny as a root cause, it doesn't help the fact that we have a president that talks about grabbing women by the what. Mm-hmm. But I think that culture is shifting. I think that you see it in sports with Rapinoe and Alex Morgan and Naomi Osaka, and you see all these women rising to the top, and you see Alicia Cortez, and you see Warren, and I think that it's shifting. I think that
it is shifting.
Yeah, it's going to be different, and I find it really interesting the fact that I think worth capturing, which is people ask me, why did I want to be a woman? I don't want to be a woman.
You are.
Uh-huh. I don't want to be 5'2" either. I just am.
You just are who you are.
My God, looking at white men in society, it looks like they're having an easy ride. I would love to be that. I just am not.
Oh. Not me, I think.
I don't. Well, I'm being facetious. Yeah. I don't relate to them. I don't understand. But I didn't choose this in the way that I think they mean choosing. Mm-hmm. And having now lived several years as a woman in society, in many ways, I am aghast. I'm outraged because I have experienced misogyny.
Did you ever hear these stories in PFLAG?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I wanted to say, Cassie, when you were speaking earlier, about the word that came up for me was assimilation, and I just,
that's a good word.
That, you know, around race. I mean, when I was first like really getting into PFLAG, and my learning curve was, you know, just it was vertical for sure. Cause I thought I knew things. I really thought I did until I got personal, and it just brought this whole other perspective. And so as you were speaking earlier, we hear this all the time in PFLAG. As I'm the new board president, I attempt to go to all the chapter meetings. Mm-hmm. We have the first Wednesday is East County, second Tuesday is Portland, third Thursday is Washington County. I go to all three. Without a doubt, back me up here, Dawn, I would say a minimum of about 50% of people who attend are new parents of kids, young people, all age ranges, of who are trans or non-binary, and they're afraid. Mm-hmm. They're scared for their child, given the environment that's going on. So as you were saying earlier, one of the biggest messages that we give to parents who just, they want to support their kids. They want to know, if they didn't, they wouldn't be a PFLAG. Right. They are just admitting they don't know, they need help, they need support. And I remember the first time I said this to a parent, she told me, she felt like I just hit her in the chest with something, because I said, your child is not your teacher.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Come to us for the education. They're still figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't even matter if they were trans. They're 14. They don't have exactly all the answers.
And you raise a really good point, which is a cancer patient is not an oncologist.
Right.
A trans woman is not a gender specialist.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, you know, we might know some things instinctively from what's going on with us, but we don't know all the things. And a 14-year-old girl or a 14-year-old gay boy is mm-hmm. not going to know all the things. The dynamic also, I think you bring up, having your child be your teacher shifts the dynamic of who's the authority in a way that could be detrimental in many ways.
It's also a little confusing, I think, for parents. And this is a very frequent, recurrent theme. It just came up in one of the last meetings we had in Portland, where we just tried to tease out for the parent that probably part of what was going on was just the fact that your kid is 16, may have absolutely nothing to do with their gender identity.
Mm-hmm.
But then beyond that, you're here to get that information and to get that support and to get those resources. You need to let your kid grow up and figure out who they are. And that's definitely a message we try to give regularly.
I wanted to go back to something. I wanted to go back to something. Before you do,
Kelsey, sorry, I have to kind of steer the ship here for a minute. we've got about 6 minutes left in the show. So what we're going to do for our last 5 or 6 minutes here is just kind of highlight some of the work that both of your organizations are doing and how people can get in touch with you, because I know that we want to make sure to, once we leave the show tonight, people know how to find you outside of the radio.
Thank you so much.
And also, this has been such an interesting conversation. There's so many places to go, and I would really love to invite both of you back to a future show to continue this conversation.
We'd love that. Yeah. That'd be great. Yeah.
And because it, thank you. It's really interesting, you know, having these conversations between like different kinds of organizations, mm-hmm. which has always been kind of like a vision that I have for Queer Boo, because we have a lot of organizations in Portland that are serving the LGBTQ plus community,
mm-hmm.
and we don't always necessarily talk to each other, or sometimes we don't talk to each other like in ways that we may not like think of, you know, like getting PFLAG together with a organization that specifically supports trans women
mm-hmm.
is like really specific, but it's also like tailored to, I mean, Portland is like a huge like gathering point for the trans community. I mean, trans mm-hmm. folks come here from all over mm-hmm. the country because they know Portland is someplace where we're safe and we're supported.
Yeah, I'm not even, this is a joke that I make, I don't know how funny it is, but I was like, I'm not even special here.
Right, yeah, you're just another.
But, you know, you said something earlier, Cassie, and it made me stop and think that, you know, actually, I identify as Latina,
mm-hmm.
but I'm biracial,
mm-hmm.
and my father was, he only liked claiming Irish, but he was English and French, so he was the Anglo,
mm-hmm.
and so he was male, white, so my maiden name was an Anglo name, but for those of you who can't see me, I look Latina, right? Mm-hmm. So I dealt with, once I left Catholic school, I didn't even know what really prejudice was, like some credit to the Catholic Church, you know, they had no tolerance for that. So kids, we were just, you know, Jesus loved the little children, and that's what we knew. And mm-hmm. I went to public school, and the first time I heard the word spick, I didn't even know what it was. I had to go home and ask my mom, and she got angry at me for saying it, and I didn't even know what she was mad about. So anyway, so, you know, I've had experiences around being with Latinos. They look at me and say, oh, you're one of us. And then they start talking about Anglos. And then, you know, I have to ride this out for a moment because, you know, you're talking about my dad and my redheaded brother
and sister. Yeah, when you're at the crossroads or identity.
So, mm-hmm. you know, you have to kind of call them on it. And so kind of having that experience, you know, going into PFLAG and all the intersectionality, I learned that term at my mm-hmm. first board meeting. I asked what that was, you know, and I get it now. But, you know, I had an incident in, I went to visit, or excuse me, go on a medical mission. One of my daughters is a nurse, and we went on this medical mission to Kenya. And we were having dinner on our last night, and I had had a conversation with some of the other nurses and stuff about the gay community, the queer community in Kenya. And they were only Nairobi was where they went. And so anyway, one of the drivers, we were literally on a medical mission, and whatever you picture in your head as being in Africa, out in the big Jeep down rutted roads. That's what we were doing. So the one of the drivers was sitting next to me, and we were talking about the gay community, he and I and this other woman who was actually head of the organization for that weekend. And he made the comment that if his brother was came out as gay, he would kill him.
Oh, where well, do people get this idea
all these
that it's a requirement?
Wanting to kill queer people.
And I just was silent. Horrible. I was just silent for.
You need
I was
to love
stunned.
Our queer people.
I was sitting next to him. I was so stunned. Then the woman who was sitting on the other side of him, who was kind of the head of our gathering, she looked at him and she was like, "What? Why would?" What
right.
And he said, "So then," and I mean, I was stunned for a moment, and then he said, "He goes, this is what I would have to do. In fact, if I, you could line up all the queer people, all the gay people, and I had a gun, I would shoot them. I would shoot them all." And you know, after 11 years in PFLAG, I realized that this is the moment of being an ally. But really what came up for me was Mama Bear.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to get weepy here. But I couldn't take it. I couldn't stay silent. Mm-hmm. And he was closer to me than you are, Emma.
Uh-huh.
And we were sitting on a corner of a table there. And I just turned to him and I said to him, "I need to tell you how that makes me feel when you say that. My son is gay." And he literally picked up his chair and like jumped it back. And I said, "And you are wrong."
Oh, very good.
You are wrong to say that. And it was such a stunning experience. And
it's so good that you vocalized. Yeah. I think Emma's getting worried about the time, aren't you?
I am. I'm so sorry that we're going to have to close this conversation. We've only got a couple of minutes left. So let's just do really quick. How can people get in touch with PFLAG?
The best way to get in touch with PFLAG is probably through our website, www.pflagpdx.org. There's a contact us on there, and Pat and I pick up those emails. We're pretty quick about it. We also have a Facebook page, PFLAG Portland Family of Chapters, and we'll take messages through Facebook as well. So those are the best ways to get in touch with us.
It's for you 400,000 members, so it's pretty. You can find you've got an
you
internet
can find
presence.
Us. We have an
you
internet
can get
presence.
On Google and type in PFLAG.
We will come up,
and it'll come up. And there's regular meetings. There
are three meetings a month in the Portland
in
area
Portland, where people can get support.
Yep.
Great. And what about empowered trans women? Where how can people find out more about that? And I know you've got some sort of online summit happening.
I do, yeah. And it's Empowered Trans Woman.
Thank you.
Yes, but so empoweredtranswoman.com is the online presence, and I'm updating the website as best I can. I'm most active on the Facebook group, Facebook page, which, of course, it's facebook.com/empoweredtranswoman. And then the Instagram also, it's easy to find. It's at empoweredtranswoman. I'm also doing work with two groups here in Portland that I want to mention real quick. One is called Basic Rights Oregon.
Yay, we love Basic Rights Oregon.
Yay, bro.
And I spoke with them at Front and Center recently. And also, I volunteer with Beyond These Walls. I lead a group of trans women at the Oregon State Penitentiary. Mm-hmm. There's a group of women who are in this facility for men, and they obviously have a difficult journey.
We are having you back on, Cassie. Mm-hmm. I promise you, we are having you back on, because we need to talk about that. All right, but we are out of time for now, so thank you so much for joining us. Next week is Preference with Alan, and don't forget, Pledge Drive is coming up September 16th to the 28th, so get your checkbooks ready. You are listening to Transpositive on KBOO. We'll see you next week, and thanks so much to Somia. Have a great vacation, Somia. You do such a great job. Thank you. Good night. Yeah.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Project Northwest on Friday, September 6th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge inside Mississippi Pizza in Portland. Project Northwest is a local zine that helps promote local hip-hop and R&B artists with an emphasis on showcasing artists that identify as Black and POC, LGBTQIA+, women, and artists who experience disabilities. Again, that's Project Northwest on Friday, September 6th at 10 p.m. at the Atlantis Lounge inside Mississippi Pizza, 3552 North Mississippi in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Heal Right Workshop series for those who identify as Black, Indigenous, or a person of color.
The Heal Right Workshop series is an opportunity for emerging writers of color to connect, share, create, and constructively critique with others that can relate.
The workshops are on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon, and the deadline to register is September 6th, 2019.
Again, that's the Heal Right Workshop series for people who are Black, Indigenous, or POC. The deadline to apply is September 6th.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO, KBOO, Portland. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Seattle Theater Group, presenting Big Boy, hip-hop producer, rapper, and member of Outkast, Friday, September 6th at the Roseland Theater. Tickets and more information at